towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Take this sacred sound from the mandala of the mouth, blow it into your hands, and pour it upon yourself as a blessing from above. Well, today's class, we've been working in our own group on a series called The Deeper Side of Life. And this is on the essence of purification, excuse me. And I hope that it'll give us some new insight into Murshid's concept, and also some of the ancient Sufis into why purification is so important. I remember Murshid Hidayat said these practices are so important to do them on a daily basis, because from day to day, it could be even moment to moment, we are given impressions from the external world. And sometimes when those impressions accumulate, we think this is reality, when in essence it isn't. So to purify the body with water, to purify the mind with prayer and contemplation, to purify all, you know, the Buddhist would say the body, speech, and mind, it's very important, and it helps us remain fresh and renewed. And so that's what we're doing here. And so again, this is titled, give me just one moment here. This talk is titled, or this presentation or this offering is titled The Deeper Side of Life, The Essence of Purification. I pulled a quote from Murshid Hazratanai Khan that says, "Verily, one is victorious who has conquered oneself. Verily, one is victorious who has conquered oneself." As I go along, I'll cite where these readings have come from. These are Murshid's words, Hazratanai Khan's words. And he says this: the first thing in purifying the mind is to be able to discern the foreign element there. As all that is foreign to the body does not agree with the body, making it ill, so all that is foreign to the mind disturbs the peace of mind. And it is that which proves that it does not belong to the mind. Such things are worry, anxiety, fear, sorrow, or any sort of disturbance that makes or takes away the tranquility of the mind, preventing it from experiencing that joy and peace for which it longs, and in which alone is its satisfaction. Now, I don't know about you, but I know that throughout my day, or through the news or things that come to me, I can have worry, I can have anxiety, but I do know that the main cure for that is my practice. So we'll continue with the reading of Murshid's. There are many who do not know the importance of keeping the mind in a pure and harmonious condition. The few who know it find it difficult to bring about a better condition in practical life. So while we may have these wonderful experiences in retreat or spiritual camps, sometimes in everyday life, it can be a challenge, and Murshid's acknowledging that here. Back to Murshid's words. In the first place, it is difficult to accomplish outward duties, to answer the demands of life, and yet keep the mind in perfect tranquility. So that's why we call it practice. We do our practices to bring about that tranquility, so we have that field through which to operate. Because the truth is in everyday life, we need to be able to respond and not be just in our equipoise on a lotus pad. So, you know, it is important to have both those abilities of activity and repose. But nonetheless, starting with that field of tranquility, of peace, of love, harmony, and beauty, as Murshid calls it, inwardly, is significant. On to Murshid's words. It needs the knowledge of purifying the mind of all external influences, hence the practice. And the way one can manage it can be said in a few words. Here it is. Throw away disharmony by the power of harmony. And to wash away all that lacks beauty by preserving the great power of beauty within. Now, I remember being at a retreat, and it was I think it was the first retreat. It was even before I was an initiate, with my teacher, Murshida Viracorda. And she was dealing with the inner child. And she had told the parents in the group that if their child had had a harmful impression come to them, or if they had been abused in any way, not necessarily by the family, but it could have been something external, the child would display certain behaviors. Her advice to the parents was not to highlight it or to be alarmed by it, but that they should impress the child with beauty. And that was the cure. And Murshid is saying this. To wash away all that lacks beauty by preserving the great power of beauty within. And so she told them to give them a concentration practice, the child, something beautiful that the child was drawn to, perhaps a flower or a special toy, but that continually impressed that upon the child would help to relieve the pain of whatever might have happened to them. So think about that. This reading is from, and I think we will return to it in a bit also, but it's from the Healing Papers on Purity, Foreign Element in the Mind. So Murshid goes on to say, there are five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, as spoken of by the mystics. And they do not only compose germs, but they can also destroy them. If only one knew how one could make use of those five elements to purify one's body and one's mind. That is from Sufi Message Volume 4, Mental Purification and Healing on Health. So I'd like to stop here with a practice and offer this practice. And it is the elemental breaths. I think most of you know that practice. The sequence of the breath practice is always the same, whether it's purification breaths or elemental breaths. However, there can be different concentrations given. And I do want to note that the full instructions of this, along with other readings, is available in our archive, sufi-message.org. If you navigate to teachings and the archives, this was last month's teaching, June 2023. But I went through Murshid's teachings, and let me just see here. There's more of an explanation because just briefly, I'll say this about that teaching. Murshid went into each element and the characteristics or qualities or kind of personality of each one of these elements. And we worked with a practice which came from my own study, but you may find it helpful. Now, I will say, as we work with the colors placed in the various parts of the body, it may not be exactly what one knows from past experience. In other words, Murshid refers to five centers, not seven or eight, that he considers the primary centers. he considers other centers as secondary and tertiary, but these five centers relate to these five elements, and they have a place in the body. So again, as we're working with these centers, or we could call them chakras, they may appear different than we know from other Eastern traditions. Nonetheless, we know that Murshid studied with all kinds of yogis, Hindu, Muslims, and also Buddhist. So these are derived from his experience and his teachings. And just try to flow with it. So we're going to concentrate at these five centers given by Murshid corresponding to the elements. We're going to use the colors that Murshid gives us for the elements. And I'm going to say words as we breathe in and out that are characteristics of these elements. Is everybody game? Okay, ready? Okay. So first we concentrate on the earth element. The breath of the earth is in through the nose and out through the nose, as you know. The color is golden color. It could be described as a yellow topaz, sometimes I've heard it described as the color of sand. We are going to concentrate at the base of the spine. Imagine that you're sitting on a golden moon disc, and this color is emanating in that center and reflecting in that center. The breath shouldn't be exaggerated. It's natural, but if you can keep the rhythm of the breath sort of equal in its swing in and out, that is helpful and very balancing. So we focus at the base of the spine. The color is gold. The breath is in and out the nose in a balanced way. And we'll breathe five breaths and concentrating on these characteristics. The first characteristic is I breathe in calmness. I breathe out calmness. I breathe in quietude. I breathe out quietude. I breathe in stability. I breathe out stability. I breathe in humility. I breathe out humility. I breathe in groundedness. I breathe out groundedness. The next element is the element of water. Here we will concentrate in the lower abdomen below the belly button. There we will see a beautiful green, fresh color. It could be the color of an emerald or a green peridot. The color's green. It is radiating from this center. We're breathing into that center. The element is water. The breath goes in through the nose and out through the mouth. And we breathe in adaptability. And out adaptability. We breathe in responsiveness. And out responsiveness. We breathe in rejuvenation. And out rejuvenation. Breathing in revitalization. And out revitalization. And in regeneration. And out regeneration. I'm going to pause here and reflect on the teachings on breath that Pirmoinadine's been giving and talking about receiving that full breath or taking it in, like allowing the abdomen, the lower abdomen and the upper abdomen, to expand, but then rise, the breath rises even fuller, fanning out. It's almost like our heart and wings. We let that breath fill our being and let the wings expand. So think of that. The breath comes, starts low and rises, fills us as we breathe in and out. Next breath, fire. Here, Mercia talks about it in the abdomen region above the belly button, the navel. Interestingly enough, he refers to the heart as a secondary chakra. So this is really more of a solar plexus, and instructions on the zikr. I know some of you have received those, or I've given Mershit's instructions. He always refers to the heart is like a reflector. It draws the reflection from the solar plexus. So we're going to concentrate on this lower, below the heart, the physical heart, in the solar plexus region. We're going to let the breath fill that region with red light, like a beautiful ruby, or sometimes the color that we see at sunset or sunrise. Anyway, the color is red, and we breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. The breath rises, and these are the qualities. We breathe in through the mouth, vitality, and out through the nose, vitality. We breathe in courage. And we breathe out courage. We breathe in compassion. And out compassion. We breathe in aspiration. And out aspiration. We breathe in inspiration. And we breathe out inspiration. We bring our awareness to the third eye area in the forehead. You might want to just touch there and see where that, which of that area, it may be different on individuals. I kind of have a spot right in here. It's between the brow, but slightly light, higher for me. Yours may be different, but you're going to try to touch that center and feel it activated. This is the element of air. The color is blue. Could be envision like a beautiful blue sapphire or blue clear sky. The breath is in the mouth and out the mouth. It can help if you close your eyes and move the eyes upward as if looking at that point. In fact, doing all these breaths, it's the same. You can look downward also as if you're looking at those centers. So just sort of putting the awareness there and focusing the eyes, albeit closed, in that area. So we breathe in the mouth, creativity. And we breathe out the mouth, spaciousness. And again, we can breathe in creativity and out spaciousness. We breathe in insight and we breathe out insight. We breathe in and activate our intuition. And out intuition. And we breathe in imagination. And out imagination. Final element is ether. It is said that it is both the accumulation and the distribution or dissolution of all the elements. So raise your awareness. And again, you can raise your glance with your eyes closed to the top of the head. The color is, you may see it differently. I see it as prismatic, that all the colors are dancing together. Sometimes it's said that the color is gray, which of course, if we were mixing pigments, it would come to a kind of grayish tone. But here we can see it as light. And again, prismatic light, the colors dancing together. The breath returns to in through the nose and out through the nose. It becomes more subtle in this element. So almost like an imperceptible breath, or Mursha Gwalioli would call it the breath within the breath. So we breathe in through the nose and out through the nose. Stillness. We breathe in through the nose and out through the nose. Peace. We breathe in and out, understanding. And breathing in and out, wisdom. And lastly, we breathe in and out, enlightenment. And just take a few moments and feel your body. Observe any feelings that may arise and note the condition of mind. At the end, if you wish, we can, after the end of this teaching, we can also discuss things or have question and answer. Going back to Mursha's teachings, he says this: the real purification of the mind is in purifying it from thoughts and impressions which live in it as a germ of disease. The best way of cleansing the mind from all this is to be able to empty the mind of any thought, feeling, or impression. To be pure means to be natural, meaning not mixed with other things, just natural and pure, unadulterated, just pure, the essence of something. The spirit of man and woman is in its natural condition, is not a thought, but mind. So the natural condition is not a thought, but mind. It's like this field of mind, open and spacious. And it's not love, which can be limiting, but it's heart. This field of heart. For as the thought is outcome of mind, So is love the outcome of heart? So we want to get back to that natural essence beyond limited individuated thought and beyond limited individuated love. Murshid goes on to say, to attain purity, which is the seeking of the mystic, one must be able to purify one's spirit from every thought and feeling. However deeply impressed or engraved on in one's heart. And he gave us a clue before to impress with beauty and harmony. Pivalayat talked about some of the tragedies in his own life. And one of the things that he did was he locked himself into a room for 6 weeks, playing a special piece of music. And when he emerged, he felt he was cured from that devastating event in his life. It's interesting that all the children played music like Murshid, but they didn't only play music, they lived music. I know how Pir Vilayat was so, he would rise to ecstasy during the cosmic celebration and the music. He always integrated music into the retreats. We would work with a Wazifa practice and a teaching, and then he would emphasize it by his meditating on a piece of music that he had selected. Music bypasses everything. It's a whole unique language. But at any rate, back to the teachings. The mystic goes as far as purifying oneself from one's identity. We make this motion, the sign of the cross, where we say, this is not my body, this is the temple of God. This is not my heart, this is the altar of God. And we know that our soul holds the seed of that divine being within. That's why Murshid always talks about the heart and not hurting another's heart, because God is within. So again, Murshid says, to attain to the purity, which is the seeking of the mystic, one must be able to purify one's spirit from every thought and feeling, however deeply impressed, like the child that maybe had been hurt. Impressing the child with beauty, so important. We must do that for ourselves. I noticed in some of your places, you have beautiful pictures or objects, contemplating them deeply. And I'm leading up, by the way, to a concentration practice. Some of you have done that practice with me before, but it's a beautiful practice. Okay. And one must be able to purify one's spirit from every thought and feeling, however deeply impressed or engraved on one's heart. The mystic goes as far as purifying oneself from one's identity by removing it for a certain time and by putting something else in its place. Just for a certain time, we put this identity aside. And from beginning to end, the whole process of spiritual development depends upon this. So this ability to put aside personality, likes, dislikes, preferences. Isn't it in the third patriarch of Zen, it says, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preference. When you're a group of with myself, a group of female Murids who are also dear friends, we made it a practice during that whole time to not say I like or I don't like. Even if we tasted something that was unpleasing to us, we didn't use those words. I like, I don't like, especially I don't like, we tried not to use. So that was our little extra practice we did. These past paragraphs are from Murshid's teachings, again, the healing papers, purity, and to purify one's identity. I note these always on my lecture notes. Now, some of you may have read this. It's called the oldest Persian treatise on Sufism. Has anyone, Moinuddin, have you read that? It's called Kafshal Majub. No, okay, I'll share it with you if you like. I have a PDF. You can share it with your students. It's a beautiful text. And for some reason, Murshid, when I was baby Sufi, which I'm still a baby Sufi, I think, Murshid Avira insisted that I find this text. It took some time, but I found one through a bookseller that was in Lahore and shipped to me. It's a very complex detailing of different Sufi school of thoughts on different subjects of Sufism. And it's called Kafsh al-Majub, which is like, you know, insight behind the veil. And it's by Al-Hujwiri. But I want to read his notes on purification because it's quite deep and it's also very simple at the same time. So it's just a couple lines and then we'll get into another practice. I check my time. Okay. So Al-Hujwiri says this: purification is of two kinds, outward and inward. Thus, prayer requires purification of the body, and gnosis requires purification of the heart. So I know that, again, when Murshid Avira would attend our retreats in the Midwest, the Ozark camp, she'd always ask that a large bucket of water be put outside of the zikr hall. And she asked people to kind of do their ablutions before entering for prayer. And some of you are familiar with that practice. You've learned how to do those ablutions. At any rate, it's just really kind of cleansing the breath, the mouth, the nostrils, the head, the hands, and the feet. And of course, this is an old custom because as you can imagine, the caravans moving across the deserts, when they came to places to pray, of course, they would want to cleanse themselves in some way. So this custom, we still do. So again, I'm going to the beginning of this statement. Purification of the two kinds, the outward and inward. Thus, prayer requires purification of the body and gnosis or knowledge, insight, wisdom requires purification of the heart. Again, those of you that have traveled to the Middle East or India or Turkey, Morocco, you know that there are always those pools, there's fountains outside the mosques for you to purify. And this outward purification brings mindfulness to purifying the heart before we enter places to pray. Hujwiri says, as in the former case, the water must be clean. So in the latter case, unification must be pure and belief undefiled. So having this kind of simple trust in God as our father, mother, you know, just this, and then unifying our mind, which of course we have to delete those thoughts and feelings for a moment at least, and our personal identity to have that unification. The Sufis are always engaged in purification outwardly and unification inwardly. The words of Al-Hujwiri, Kafsh al-Majub. Now, this is leading me up to a concentration practice. And this is a practice that was frequently done at summer school in the Netherlands. Piero Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan drew from the essence of Murshid's teachings. There's a body of teachings called Mystic Relaxation, and it deals with the knowledge of how to have the balance of activity and repose. It also deals with the subject of concentration, contemplation, meditation. Very important sequence. And we are going to go through this in a rather creative, beautiful way that I hopefully you'll have a good experience of this. So these are the words and the instructions by Piero Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan. They say, concentration may create positive or negative results, either intentionally or unintentionally, according to whether the concentration is willingly directed or whether one is obsessed by one's own thinking. Now, who hasn't been victim of this, where circles of ideas keep going around, can't stop it? This is helping to stop it, so you can have this unification and sort of eliminate, delete these thoughts possibly. So hopefully this practice will be a benefit. So he goes on to say, obviously, if one is not able to delete unwanted thoughts, there is some danger in becoming a slave to the power of concentration, or we could say negative concentration. For this reason, both holding and erasing or eliminating are the two great applications of concentration and should be developed simultaneously. This is his introduction to the practice. So he says, the holding of a thought is constructive because it helps to bring about inner strength. So, you know, holding that thought and keeping that thought, it develops inner, it's like an inner yoga. It's like holding an asana in a yoga pose, and steadiness of mind. Whereas the other power, the ability to delete unwanted entangled thoughts, helps to free the mind of worries and fears and could be called concentration. I love the way he writes and speaks. So he says the purpose of this guided concentration, regardless of what object is chosen for concentration, it is the impression alone which remains at the end of the fifth step. And I will talk us through these steps as an abstraction of consciousness, or in other words, a condition of all-pervading serenity. Oh, God willing, may we attain that. So the steps are, and I'll just read them, but then I'll take us through one by one. There are five steps in this practice. One is first observation. So we observe in detail, and I'll talk us through and draw your attention to what we'll be concentrating on and talk about its qualities and attributes. Then we will visualize that inwardly. Then we will creatively alter that image inwardly, and then we'll project it out in different places in the world. Then we'll bring it back together and we'll deconstruct it, and let's see what remains. So for a moment, I'm going to just click away here because I want to share my screen with the... with the object of our concentration. Can everyone see that? You see a vase, a clear vase with white roses. So with open eyes, we will concentrate on the details of this setting. First of all, notice the clear round vase. There's nothing adorning it. It's just simple and clear. This represents a kind of clarity and fullness. Notice the water that's at the bottom of the vase. Again, no color, just simple, clear, and pure, unadulterated, unmixed. And what is this water doing? Like the water element, it's offering rejuvenation and freshness through the stems up to the flower, the buds, the blossoms. So it's like these stems, these beautiful fresh green stems, are sipping the water like straws to give nourishment and revivification to the blossoms. We notice some greenery of the leaves, and then the fullness of the bouquet, the white roses. Roses are always the symbol of Sufis. They're like, as they're like a bud that unfolds and is ever sort of enfolded upon itself. It's like a deep caress. And the color is white, although with the photography, they may appear a slight yellow, which is okay, or cream in color, as you wish to visualize them. And there's multiples of them. But the color, again, represents a kind of purity, a freshness. They are open, the buds, to their fullness. And we, inshallah, God willing, can open to the fullness of God's love and blessings upon us. Notice that there's no background. It's just space. So we have all the elements here of sorts, don't we? White blossoms that even have a slight gold tone in their shadows. Earth. We have the green of the stems. And water. We have the, we don't have blue, but we can kind of see a little blue tint in our beautiful vase. And that vase holds space as well as around it. Freshness. So please concentrate on this and take this image in, because in a few moments, we're going to close our eyes and we want to be able to hold. You may want to, for a moment, open your eyes and close it, close them, and see if you can hold the concentration of that image, that vase, flowers, and water in your mind's eye. If you do need to throughout the practice, you can open your eyes again to capture it, but try as you can now to retain the image inwardly. Now, in your mind's eye, let's again see the roundness of the vase, its fullness, its openness, its spaciousness, but also a support for those beautiful roses. We see the water in its clarity and beauty, giving nourishment to the rose stems that are sipping the water, revivifying and holding the freshness of the beautiful blossoms, the roses that are open in fullness and beauty. And then we see the spaciousness around. Not only in the vase, there's space, but around it, space. A scene of tranquility, of stillness, a moment of freshness, of beauty. We may even notice the fragrance of the roses. And now, see this little vase of flowers and these roses multiplying. That there are many of them now filling the space. You may be even visualize them filling the space around you. But there's this beautiful emergence of multiple images. And let me ask you, can you change them? Maybe one vase and one set of flowers is gold. And one vase and one set of flowers is green. And one vase and one set of flowers is red. And one vase and one set of roses is a lavender color, blue. And lastly, the vase could have multiple colors, be prismatic in nature, and multiple blossoms of all the colors. Not only do we have five vases, but we can multiply them 5 times 5, then 5 again. So they're filling infinite space, sparkling with life, fragrance, beauty. In Buddhism, we call this ability to hold this concentration the merit field, where we see infinite Buddhas. If you like, you could see a deity of choice sitting on top or in space above these beautiful roses in varied colors. You can even change the vases if you wish. Maybe they're taller. Maybe they're shorter. Maybe they're square. Maybe they're curved. Maybe they're etched glass. Whatever you see, hold that vision. Infinite space filled with infinite beauty. And now we take these infinite objects and we send them out into the world. So perhaps first we send them to the homes of our friends and our family. We could even deliver some to people that challenge us. How nice would that be that they receive something beautiful from us? As I was doing the practice yesterday, I thought, what if I could place these beautiful flowers upon every grave that has ever been? And what about all the beautiful temples, mosques, churches, synagogues? Send them out. Filling all of space. And we especially need to consider sending them to our politicians, the people that hold power. They need beauty. They need love. They need courage to do the right things. And our beautiful Mother Earth and the space in the sky, and especially parts of the world that are troubled with war, that need so desperately to be reminded of beauty and love and harmony. Keep sending them out to all the places you can possibly imagine, the jungles, the sea, air. Now start to draw these back in. The impression will remain, but we're wanting to now bring, as we would in our Buddhist practices, we do this. We bring it in back to a single image. And if we were doing this as a Buddhist practice, we would allow it to enter our crown chakra and reside in our heart. You can do that. Or simply visualize as the image was given, this clear round vase, a little bit of water through which the stems can sip life into the beautiful blossoms. And now we start to erase this image. And we start at the bottom, and we first imagine we erase from the bottom up the base of the vase, and we erase all the vase while magically the water remains. So suspended in space is this clear water. And the flowers holding them their shape as if the vase was still there. But the vase is now gone. And now we erase the water. It's gone. And suspended in space are the stems with the blossoms on top. Now start to erase the stems, moving upward, little by little, and now the white field behind it appears. There's only space remaining. And we get to the blossoms, and you may want to move in a circular direction, starting to delete and erase the blossoms all the way until there's nothing more left. Just space. And hold this empty spaciousness in your concentration. slowly begin to open your eyes and maybe move around a little bit. But allow this feeling of all-pervading space to remain. The remembrance of beauty and freshness. All-pervading life and space. And with palms pressed together, let's say together the Khatum. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving forgiveness, raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen.